A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these organizations. We'll look at the impact of the economy, technology, and society on the arts, the importance of arts education, and how these organizations and ensembles are adjusting and innovating as they face the future. Today, we'll head out west to hear about a relatively new festival that brings together music, art, and science. The theme of this year's Off the Hook Music Summerfest is Mission Earth, and I'll speak with composer and artistic director Bruce Adolph about what's in store and about a work he's premiering at the festival inspired by the words of an astronaut. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The Minnesota Orchestra has named Akiko Fujimoto as its associate conductor for the upcoming season. Fujimoto spent the past season with the orchestra as assistant conductor, leading young people's concerts and other educational programs, and acting as a cover conductor for subscription and live at orchestra hall concerts. Previously, she was associate conductor of the San Antonio Symphony. Born in Japan, she is a graduate of Stanford University and earned her master's degrees in choral and orchestral conducting from Boston University and the Eastman School of Music. Violinist Zach Depew is leaving his position as concertmaster of the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra after 11 years. According to the Indianapolis Star, Depew, who was a founding member of the trio Time for Three, didn't give a reason for his departure. According to the paper, Depew, now 38, became one of the youngest concertmasters in the U.S. when he took the Indianapolis position in 2007. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. Summertime is festival time, and one of the more recently created summer music festivals is held in Fort Collins, Colorado, organized by Off the Hook Arts. Off the Hook Arts was founded by Jephtha Bernstein, and throughout the year it brings chamber music programs into area schools and works with string, woodwind, and piano students, and it also holds a winter festival. Now in its seventh season, the Summerfest brings together music, the visual arts, and scientists for concerts and lectures. This year's theme is Mission Earth, and it explores the impact of climate change on the planet through music, lectures, films, and educational events. The centerpiece this year is a multimedia project called Ouroboros, which uses video, animation, music, and sounds from space and Earth created by artist Kate Doyle, composer Bruce Adolph, and artist Chris Clay. Adolph's composition is called I Saw How Fragile and Infinitely Precious the World Is, and it's based on the words of Dr. Pierce Sellers, a British-American astronaut who flew three space shuttle missions and served as director of Earth Sciences and deputy director for science and exploration at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. The festival opened June 24th and runs through July 20th. I spoke with Adolph last week, and we talked about his piece and how the concept for the Summerfest developed.
Well, Off the Hook started with Jephtha Bernstein wanting to have music education at a high level in Fort Collins, Colorado. And then she had the idea of having a music festival, and she knows how hard that is to pull off. So she called me, and I hadn't seen Jephtha for over 20 years, and I live in New York. But she and I met at two music festivals that were both starting up. One was Angel Fire in New Mexico, And the other was Vail, Bravo Vail, it's now called, in Colorado. And she asked me if I would come be artistic director for the festival. So I agreed. That's about 7 summers ago. And it started off just as a chamber music festival with an educational component. But it has gradually become more and more an interdisciplinary festival with music as the primary driving force. So it's mostly chamber music, and it's chamber music simply because that's the most intimate, the most feasible economically, and also the most personal kind of music festival to put on. The only other possibility would be to do something huge, like with orchestras, et cetera. So we started with a music festival, and my own desire to make large statements when one has a platform, to make statements that maybe resonate through the arts but slightly beyond the arts, became part of the vision. And we started doing that simply with things that interest me, like neuroscience and psychology and stuff like that, so that it helps bring in other audience members, and it kind of resonates in the community in a different way. So originally we were doing some programming where the music, and I've written quite a few pieces myself like this, where the music has something to do with cognitive theory or neuroscience. But then as things evolved, I happened to be going to the Salzburg Global Seminar, which is in Salzburg, Austria. And one of the things that I came away with from that is how it's possible to really integrate social issues, science issues, all kinds of disciplines into both educational and performance situations. And I was doing that for years, but somehow when I saw that it was happening around the world and becoming more and more important, I thought, let's do that in Fort Collins and Boulder. And so the festival moves from neuroscience and music to doing things like a combination of visual arts and film and theater and human rights last year, and this year climate change. And next year, it's going to be perception, which is not really a social issue, but it has to do with cognitive things. So it would be a mistake to think that I've politicized the festival. That's not the point. The point is to deal with relevant issues that we live with every day and see how the arts can drive people's thoughts about those subjects.
Hmm. Well, this summer's is Mission Earth, and I was wondering what in particular inspired that theme and then how you built the surrounding activities around that.
What started it actually was a visit from the visual artist Kate Doyle, who is our artist in residence for the summer. And I didn't know her at all, but we met through some mutual connections. And Kate wanted me to write a piece of music that would connect to some artwork she had in mind that would in some way honor the achievements of Piers Sellers. And he was, of course, an astronaut and also a scientist at NASA and at the Goddard Space Center. And I thought that was a great idea. I got very inspired by listening to Piers Sellers speak. And he died, I think it's a year ago, but it might be a little more than that. And, for example, I listened to him speaking in a short film made by Leonardo DiCaprio about climate change. And Piers Sellers' interests ranged from climate change to outer space to satellites and, you know, everything connected to seeing the Earth as a whole and from a distance and understanding what it is. And one of the things he said in this movie was, "I saw how fragile and infinitely precious the world is." So I found that sentence, as many other people have found the sentence, to be incredibly inspiring and powerful and just simple and poetic. So I decided to write a piece of music that used that sentence both as the title and as the only words that are sung. There are other vocal sounds in the piece, but nothing is sung but that one sentence. And that led to the idea that maybe the whole festival should be focused on that kind of thing, seeing the Earth as a whole, seeing what a scientist has to say about where we are, what we can do. And then it turned out, Jeff and I discovered to our surprise, that in Fort Collins, the university, the Colorado University, I guess it's Colorado State University at Fort Collins, had quite a few very important climate and atmospheric scientists who knew Pierce Sellers and worked with him or studied with him or were his colleagues. And so when we told them about it, they got extremely excited. And it spread to scientists from around the country who want to honor his memory and his work and also have very important messages about what we can do, what are positive messages that can be integrated into a festival to help people understand what they should be doing, what they could be doing to help keep the planet safe. And along with Kate's artistic installation, her art installation, Ouroboros, which you probably read about, and also my piece, which is called I Saw How Infinitely Fragile and Infinitely Precious the World Is, became the sort of spine of the festival. And then Jeff and I looked for some other pieces and other ideas and other people to get involved with the festival. And so not every single piece of music is about the planet, but every concert has some scientist speaking. And then the festival evolved to be, of course, a series of chamber music concerts, some of which have music that relates to a scientific or social issue, some which don't, but all of which have a lecture or a possible pre-concert talk that has to do with the Mission Earth idea. So it's a rather unusual thing, and everyone I've mentioned it to is very excited about it. And in fact, even at the Salzburg Global Seminar, they're very excited to see something like that take place.
Well, I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit more about what your piece entails. It sets these words, but what type of atmosphere, what are some of the influences you brought into it?
Well, the piece has just two performers and also sounds that are pre-recorded. And the two performers are a mezzo-soprano and a cellist. And the cello, in many ways, for musicians, is one of the most personal and human-like instruments. I mean, the violin and the cello, perhaps the most. And the cello, though, has the whole range of the human voice, from the lowest male voice to the highest female voice, and way beyond both, in both directions. It's an enormous range. And it also is just very expressive. And so the cello by itself can have a sense of loneliness and a kind of expressivity that seemed perfect for somebody going into outer space and being alone, as Pierce Sellers has done, or I should say had done, because he's no longer alive. And the mezzo-soprano is able to sing words, which the cello is not, and brings into it this text and this sense of being grounded on Earth. So it kind of forms a relationship between a person and just this feeling of the cello in space. And then the other part of it is that it has a lot of sounds from outer space that are, you know, if you ask a scientist, they'll say there is no sound in outer space. And what that means is that there are vibrations all over space. And at NASA and other similar space research centers, they record these sounds with satellites, but they're not sounds. They're just numbers. In other words, it's just zeros and ones like a computer recorded. But then if it's translated into sound that we can hear, it is not surprising to us. It sounds like the kind of things people have imagined space would sound like. It's very interesting. So it's the idea is that in outer space, you can't hear anything. But if you could turn those vibrations into sound and put them in the range of human hearing, then they exist. And NASA has made a lot of that available. So all the sounds I've used came directly from NASA satellite interpretations of space sound. And then in addition to that, there's human body, which is actually my body, but, you know, somebody had to do it. And it's heartbeats and breathing, and there's also crying, which some of which is Kate Doyle and some of which is the mezzo-soprano on the recording is Theodora Hanslow. So when we do it live, it's being the mezzo is a young woman named Katie Ivanchin, and Sophie Shaw is playing the cello. So the piece is structured, it starts with a kind of blast off into space, and the first movement is called Orbit, and then it moves into something very ethereal and intangible and strange, like you would expect to be in orbit, that feels like it's not attached, grounded to anything. And then there's a movement called Loss, because Peter Sellers died, and of course he didn't die in space, he died at home in Washington. So it's dedicated to him and his memory, so there's a kind of grief section. And then there's the last movement is called Hope and Peace, which has to do with the feeling that we're in a lot of trouble as a planet, but there's still plenty of hope. And one of the great things about this festival, by the way, is that a lot of the good things that could be done and the things that are being done are not so well known. So that's going to be talked about by people who really know what they're talking about. But the last movement then goes into this more positive, but still strange and still detached from gravity in a way. It floats. And it has a sense of hope, and it's very peaceful. But it does leave a lot of question marks.
And alongside that, the other artistic element of this would be the Ouroboros. And what will that entail? What are some things that visitors will experience through that part of it?
That's in the art gallery, and it's a walk-in art installation where you go inside of it. And it's made of five rooms. And there are different experiences in each room. But the primary thing I can say about it is that a lot of the visual elements of it come from NASA's visualization room. NASA, just like they do with sound, they take information from space that satellites gather, and then they can convert it into things that we can see so that we understand it. And when you see it, it makes total sense. I mean, it's about the Earth, what's hot, what's cold, where motion is. Some of these things are available online in their simple form from NASA. And what Kate has been doing is turning it into a walk-in experience with her own interpretation of the visual experience, and also getting people to experience it emotionally, because she guides you from something unknown to something kind of scary, and then hopeful. And in the last room, you have a chance to reflect on what you've seen and experienced, and there are suggestions from scientists about what you can do. So I think it's both an educational and an artistic experience, in a very unusual concept.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you alluded to earlier in the conversation, this isn't the first type of program that you've put together that really melds music and science and scientific ideas. What is it about that combination that really, really inspires you?
Well, you know, it started, for me personally, it started in 1992 when I was invited to speak at a conference on science and the arts in Aspen at the Aspen Institute. And at the time, I mean, if someone invited me to do that now, which they do, it doesn't surprise me because I've been doing it for many years, but I hadn't done anything like that. And they got to me through a series of coincidences, and there was an article that came out about something I was doing. But the main thing was that I had written a book called The Mind's Ear, and it has nothing to do with neuroscience or cognitive psychology. It's a book about listening and the musical imagination. And when it first came out in its first edition, the guy who was putting together the conference for the Aspen Institute saw the title and figured that I should give the talk for the music part of it, because they had neuroscientists and geneticists and various kinds of biologists and all sorts of cognitive psychiatrists and coming to talk, and it was supposed to be also with the arts. So they only had three people from the arts and 40 scientists. It was a little unbalanced. But at that four-day conference in Aspen, I first heard certain scientists speak, and especially Antonio Damasio, who had not yet published his book, Descartes' Error. And he read from it, and I went back to my hotel room in Aspen and completely rewrote what I was going to say as a response to hearing Antonio Damasio speak, because I thought he had said so many provocative things about the brain and emotion and memory that I had to redo what I was going to do. So when I gave my talk the next day, it was quite different. And he came up to speak to me afterwards and said, "Did you write that last night?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Because you had to, because you couldn't have read any of the things that he said that I responded to had never been published or printed anywhere." So he was impressed that I went home and, I mean, not home, but I went back to the hotel and rewrote my talk. And he said, "What's your science background?" I said, "Actually, my real science background is this conference. That's about it. And your talk last night." So we became friends. And then over the years, and it's been now about 26 years, over the years, I have used things Antonio has written in his books as inspiration for composing. And then actually we wrote something together for Yo-Yo Ma in 2009. And that piece was also featured twice over the last 7 years at our festival, Off the Hook. And the piece is called Self Comes to Mind, which is also the name of a book by Antonio, but the piece came first and the book title is used later. And that's a piece that's for cello and two percussionists, where the percussion instruments represent kind of neural networks, and the cello represents the brain, the protagonist brain. And it's based on a text that Antonio wrote for me to not set for a singer, but just to use as a both inspiration and as a structural kind of design to make a piece. And then Yo-Yo premiered it with two percussionists in New York. And that was very inspiring for me, the whole thing. And that has stayed with me as a concept that it's possible for science and music especially to interact in ways that bring new audiences and have people talking in different ways about what they hear.
It's interesting in that there's such a flourishing now of so many different types of music festivals all over the country, internationally as well. But I'm curious, what are some of the challenges in creating, launching a new festival, and then sustaining it year to year to bring that audience in?
There are quite a few challenges. The first challenge is getting an audience to know that it's happening, because so many things are going on everywhere all the time, and there's so much advertising and so much marketing that to get people to focus on something totally new is not easy. So I would say the first two summers were very difficult, because we would have six people on stage and eight people in the audience. You know, it wasn't working. And the only reason I knew that was not a problem is that I had been involved in starting several other festivals. I'd been invited to participate in the early days of certain festivals. So I saw that even some huge festivals like Bravo Vale, I was there for the first summer of Bravo Vale, and they had a concert with like three people in the audience. And now it's a huge festival. And that also happened at Angel Fire. Music from Angel Fire in New Mexico is a very popular festival. And that one also in the beginning was a real struggle because, you know, it was new and people hadn't heard of it. So that's one thing. And also coincidentally, that's how Jeff and I know each other, from those two festivals where she was originally an intern and an assistant. And I was composer in residence at those festivals. And it was interesting that 20 years later, she thought to call me about that experience. And the next thing is, you know, financial, which is raising money to make the festival as good as it should be, you know, so to get the best musicians and to be able to pay for spaces and venues and marketing. And, you know, it's a lot of work, and there's a lot of competition for the same dollars everywhere. And Colorado itself has quite a few music festivals. Some of them are huge. But there's, you know, this always room for something different. And that's one of the reasons I think it's important that this festival combine disciplines like art and science, or art and music and visual arts, music and science, sometimes film. We did some theater one summer. It makes it very special. And there are very few festivals that actually link those things. There are festivals that present a variety of things, but they don't tie them all together so much. I mean, I know the Aspen Institute, where I first met Antonio, they do some of that. And I am doing a concert at the Aspen Science Center this summer, which combines neuroscience and music again. But aside from that, it's very unusual in general. So I think we're attracting audiences now, and we're also attracting some funding. It's getting better every year. And also every winter, we have a winter festival, which is much shorter. But it's important to do that because it keeps the community involved and aware that we're doing this at all.
Mm. And I was curious that there is the year-round educational aspect, which is another way to interact with the community. Do you see some spillover between what you're doing year-round in the schools and the community and at these two festivals?
Yeah, well, I mean, education is really at the root of any good experience. So every great performance has an educational element because it should move a person emotionally, but also give them some intellectual stimulation. And, the idea is that it's not just escapism. A lot of entertainment and a lot of arts is a kind of escape from reality and escape from the things that bother us, and that's totally fine and that's normal. But to create something where the music draws you in further to thinking about the world and thinking about issues and thinking about humanity and is also very important, and it's harder to do. People would much rather escape when they have a chance, of course, and everybody feels that way. But it's a very profound and moving thing to be engaged with the world through the arts rather than escaping from it. And I think that's educational at a very profound level. And all of the things that happen year round are geared towards the idea of more engagement and more involvement. And also another way of thinking of it for the kids is that, playing instruments and learning at a high level of music education is very different than spending time with screens, computers, and phones and things like that, of course. And that's really important now because so many young people have gotten away from actually doing something to more virtually doing something. And the actuality of it and the physical reality of it is really important.
That was Bruce Adolph, Artistic Director of Off the Hook Arts and its Summerfest. More information can be found at offthehookarts.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you each week on La Tempo that focus on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of A Tempo by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for A Tempo on our program page. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.